Genevieve Abdo is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show. All right, we're not in Boston. We're in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where you are a Nieman Fellow at Harvard. Your experience in the Middle East as a woman, as a reporter, as a Westerner, goes into some of these things that the rest of us, even if one has been there, just haven't seen. How is it that you can see what nobody else has seen?
I think it's a matter of determination, and it's also a matter of trying to leave behind your preconceived ideas of what you think about certain places in the world. Before I went to Egypt, I had spent several years studying about contemporary Islam and Islamic movements, and that was really why I went to the Middle East to begin with, to try to understand what I think is one of the most important historical developments, certainly of this century, and probably will become even more important in the next, as we're experiencing now,
and with the
attack of September 11th. And that is the growth of Islam as a religion and the evolution of this process, the fact that it's created extremists, the fact that it has been developed to such an extent that it's become a political force in many countries.
And in the world.
And in the world. And in America. And that's something that's really important. Islam is now the fastest growing religion in this country. So it is really too late, actually, for us to have paid attention. We should have been paying attention to this a long time ago, maybe 30 years ago.
But there is something to be said for starting now.
Better late than never.
We forget about Egypt. It doesn't show up on the front pages unless there's some dramatic event. We tend to do that in America with respect to foreign affairs anyway. But Egypt shows up when somebody's killed or something, really when something awful happens. And other than that, we just sort of send it to the background. Once Israel and Egypt signed a peace treaty, we sort of forgot it. That was taken care of. Now we had to deal with the rest of the Arab world.
But the Egyptians think of themselves as the leading light of the Middle East, don't they?
Yes, they think of themselves that way for a lot of reasons, one of which is a bit of a secret, at least in America, is that the Egyptians have always been at the center of a very vibrant film industry. So what Arabs know about Egypt and the Egyptian dialect of Arabic, in fact, which is very different from other dialects, is from watching Egyptian films. Cairo is more or less the Hollywood of the Arab film industry. And so,
also the spiritual center of the Sunni Islams, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes. The institution called Al-Azhar, which was founded during the Fatimid dynasty in 970, excuse me.
That's 970. In the current era.
A thousand plus years ago.
Yes, a thousand plus years ago. It's the center for Sunni learning and has been since then. So in religious terms, it's the center of this particular thought, the school of thought in Islam.
So you're saying religiously, culturally, economically? That Egypt has this central role? Is that also true economically?
Economically,
in the Middle East,
I wouldn't say so necessarily.
Yeah. Not enough oil.
Not enough. No. Yeah. No. Very little oil.
Yeah.
And also, Egypt has been the economy in Egypt has been more agricultural based, and probably not more centralized, but certainly in recent decades as centralized as some of the other countries. Now, there was a huge economic boom in Egypt in the 90s, and the private sector flourished. So that's not necessarily true. But Beirut, at least before the Civil War, was much more of an economic center in terms of its relationship with the West and Europe and the outside world.
Egypt also has a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, and everything else aside.
He says modestly, it's a huge number of people.
Well, particularly Cairo. I mean, my recollection is they think there may be 20 million. They think there may be 25 million in Cairo, maybe 30 million, but nobody can really count. But it is a very large city. And by Arab standards, by the standard of Muslim countries, it is just physically full of people. I mean, just the population alone would have it influential, I would think.
Yes, absolutely. They nobody knows, of course, as you mentioned, how many people live there. But they do think that a half a million Egyptians migrate to Cairo every year.
Mm.
So from the countryside,
and
if
it's
you
already
consider,
full.
Yes, it's already completely full, so much so that these satellite cities have been formed over the last decade that are as far away as 30, 40 miles from Cairo that are now considered Greater Cairo. But this pattern of migration, of course, is also similar to what's happened in Turkey. In Istanbul, they also estimate that 500,000 Turks move to Istanbul every year from the countryside. Why? Because, of course, the agricultural base of the economy has deteriorated as it has in Egypt, and people move there looking for jobs.
I think when Americans in particular, and maybe the West in general, think about the Middle East, they think about the ongoing challenges between Israel and the Palestinians. We occasionally will have a series of headlines that will focus us on Lebanon or will focus us on the Gulf, but we don't think about the Middle East. But what I'm hearing you say is maybe there's some opportunity here that it isn't a monolith anyway. Is that right?
Yes, I think it's really important to look at the Middle East or Middle Eastern countries in how they relate to one another, because they're all connected. Of course, Islam is the predominant religion, but they're also connected politically. And I think, again, the events of September 11th have made us realize in tragic ways this fact that had been ignored before. For example, you can't really isolate the Palestinian-Israeli problem from what happens on the streets of Cairo, Amman, Damascus, because this is has been the center of conflict in the Middle East for half a century. And in some way, either directly or indirectly, the normal person on the street is very aware of this conflict. And that shapes how they view the West, it shapes how they view America, and it also shapes how they view their own governments.
Their own governments.
You brought out something that I really hadn't thought about, which is the continuing occupation of Egypt, really since Alexander. And again, that puts history in a radically different perspective.
Alexander the Great.
Yeah, sometime 300 B.C., more or less, that interloper. But the Egypt we think of from a nation-state perspective has been dominated by foreigners for 2,000-plus years.
Well, let me add a little bit of trivia here. From the time of the pharaohs, when Alexander broke that chain, it really was Nasser who was the first Egyptian to run the country, wasn't it? That's a long time.
Long time.
And I say that because, for those of us who don't like foreigners running our governments for us, that we don't think about it, but it is in fact the case. The Egyptians have not had an Egyptian government for 2,000 years plus. And I would think just as a deep background that would have some effect on it, and particularly as nationalism has become more of an issue and as the self-awareness has become more of an issue.
Yes, absolutely. It did have a great effect on Egyptian history, of course. But what I think is special about Egyptians is that they've always been able to reach some accommodation with whomever might be in power that they don't agree with or they don't like. Egyptians have a much more relaxed philosophy about life. And I would say then probably other cultures.
86.3% of all other cultures.
Maybe.
No, I really ask that seriously. Is this as compared to other people in the Middle East? Or you've seen much of the world as compared, or just generally, they just seem more relaxed.
They're more relaxed, I would say, in general. But even if you compare the Egyptian response to British colonialism to, for example, the United States intervention in Iranian politics over the last century during the mid-50s with the coup of 1953, which the United States basically apologized for last year in a speech that Madeleine Albright gave. If you compare the Iranian response, which is so much more hostile, I would say, there's still a lot of resentment that is so visible on the surface in Iran in terms of the United States' involvement in that country. I mean, why did they take hostages after the revolution? This is a response to what they perceive to be American intervention in their country for too long.
Geneva Abdo is our guest, and she's going to come back, and I want to ask you more about the contrast between Iran and Egypt, because I think that's one of the places that Americans, at least, can kind of get a toehold on what's the same, what's different. We're going to be back in just a moment. Bill Russell and I are with Geneva in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I'm Paula Gordon. We hope you're with us when we return.